We at Enbridge move a huge amount of energy to people who need it, and we strive to do that as safely as we possibly can. We consider it our prime corporate social responsibility to safely deliver energy and enable society.
This is the second half of Enbridge's shareholders meeting.
Communication breakdown. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seeds?
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
And we're very proud to have been recognized for our leadership in many communities. Things like our neutral footprint approach, where we plant a tree for every tree that we have to remove to create safe right-of-way, or conserve an acre of land for every acre that we take out of service by creating that safe right-of-way, or generate a kilowatt of renewable energy for every kilowatt of energy we use to push oil or gas through those pipelines, is, I think, a very important step and something that we're encouraging more companies to be involved in, this neutral footprint approach. In March, we announced the launch of the Enbridge Center for Corporate Sustainability at the Haskane School of Business. I also have to mention the Enbridge Ride to Conquer Cancer. In 2011, more than 11,000 riders across the country raised $44 million to support cancer research. And I'm sure that's something that many of us in this room can identify with. Earlier this year, Enbridge was again named one of the global 100 most sustainable corporations in the world and ranked number two in all of Canada. And in April, for the third consecutive year, we were named one of Canada's greenest employers for 2012. And those are accomplishments that I'm as proud of as I am the financial accomplishments that I mentioned earlier. Just to wrap up, I would like to take advantage of this opportunity to thank members of our board of directors for what I consider to be exemplary guidance over what was an outstanding year in 2011. And I'd also like to extend my gratitude to the executive team for their vision, their leadership, and their support. I guess maybe most importantly, I'd like to thank more than 6,800 employees for the very hard work and for exemplifying the values of Enbridge of integrity, safety, and respect. It's critically important to me that all of our employees live to those values. Finally, I'd like to thank all of you for your attendance today, and what I would now like to do is throw the floor open to questions.
This is the second part of the Enbridge shareholders meeting from May 29th, 2012. I particularly like the part where, after all of this speech making by the Enbridge CEOs getting paid millions of dollars, when they throw it to the audience, they allow them 2 minutes. 2 minutes to make a statement.
And just a reminder, to in the interest of ensuring that as many people as possible can ask questions, if you could limit your question to a couple of minutes and then go to the back of line one at a time, I would appreciate that. And I will do my best to limit my answers to 2 minutes as well. But if I could throw it open and ask for questions, please.
Most of the comments were left to the end, and a lot of people left. And suddenly and oddly, the sound quality got a lot worse.
Good afternoon. My name is Chief Nemox. I'm a high chief of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. The proposed route of Enbridge's Northern Gateway Pipeline is proposed to pass through our territory without our permission. As this is a shareholders' meeting, I would like just simply to ask, like on the finances, the infrastructure, what the plans are, considering we've already said no. But unlike the competitor in British Columbia, you have the Kinder Morgan pipeline. I understand that Enbridge does not yet have any firm contracts with potential shippers of oil. Long after the point at which your project application has been filed with the National Energy Board, I'd simply like to ask, to what extent, in your opinion, does this reluctance on the part of on their part stem from the legal and financial risk associated with First Nations and community opposition to this project? As a follow-up, if the answer is not sufficient, what then, in your opinion, accounts for the lack of commercial support for the Enbridge Gateway project?
First of all, Chief, my view is that we've got huge commercial support. And the way that the process has been structured around Gateway is that we have asked for funding sponsors to come in and share in the development costs of Gateway. And as a result of sharing in that cost, they get the option to subscribe for capacity. And by becoming funding sponsors, they have effectively locked up that capacity. So the full capacity of the pipeline is now spoken for through the funding sponsors. And as a matter of fact, we're oversubscribed on that front. We have more that want to come in that we're able to accommodate. So we have no doubt that ultimately, with final approval of the project, that the line would run at capacity.
Just a key word, you said final approval. You haven't got first approval.
No, we haven't. We're in the process for that. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe what I'll do is switch over to this side and we'll go back and forth. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mike Grimwood, shareholder. During a recent media interview with a Harper government spokesperson, it was alleged and not refuted by the Harper spokesperson that a complaint had been received from Enbridge, which complaint was that environmental legislation was onerous. As a result of this complaint and others, according to the Harper government spokesperson, the Harper government has advisedly dramatically watered down the Environmental Protection Act, the Species at Risk Act, and the Fish Habitat Protection Act, among many others. With your indulgence, sir, I have three questions all related to that particular allegation. First, is the allegation correct? Secondly, with the watered-down legislation, how will the Neutral Footprint Program change? Thirdly, how will shareholders benefit under the new legislative, less onerous regime?
First of all, no, it's not correct. I have, for just about the duration of my career in this business, petitioned for a less onerous regulatory process. You've singled out environmental. I've never singled out environmental in my request. The process in Canada is very onerous, very lengthy, and often to the extent that it delays tremendous opportunities for this country to take advantage of resources, of opportunities, and but it's been an appeal on that basis. There's been no direct appeal for a short circuit of any environmental review. With regard to, and you're going to have to remind me what the third part of the question was, with regard to the neutral footprint approach, no change. We made that commitment on a voluntary basis. I made it at an annual meeting, I think, about 3 years ago. That's something that Enbridge lives up to no matter what the regulatory requirements are. And there is no regular requirement with regard to the neutral footprint approach. And I'm sorry, what was the third?
The third one was, how will shareholders, in your estimation, benefit from this new less onerous regime?
Well, and if we're talking about a broad reduction in the regulatory process that we have to go through, then I think we would all benefit as Canadians in seeing projects move along on a more prompt basis, not ignoring any important input to the project, but making sure that we also don't get hung up by forces that shouldn't be involved and shouldn't be having a say what we Canadians want to do.
Good afternoon. Chief Martin Dewey, elected shareholders, investors, human beings. I want to stress human beings because we all have children. We all have children that's going to have to live for the future. I was raised to respect everything, the land, the water, people around you. I respect everything that you guys are doing. You accomplish a lot of things in your lives. I respect that. But when it comes down to our water, our land, destruction of it, because there's spills just about every day, I'm just wondering how far are you and the government going to go in destroying part of the humanity? That's what's going to happen. Everyone, you know that. All the shareholders, investors, you all got children that's going to live for the future. The amount of money you guys make, you can be able to do things in a safe manner. And I know the country of Canada is run by industries. Has always done that ever since the first beaver that was shot years ago. And it kept on growing. They destroyed our land at home with the Kenny Dam to put out energy. And it's continuing, and it's time. Yankadene, when we talk about Yankadene people, I'm talking about people of the earth, I'm talking about all of you. Every one of you have a stake in the future. How far are you willing to go, you and the government, in trying to stop us? What is it going to take? Because we're not going to go away. I want to make it sure that stakeholders, investors, banks, we want these things too, but not in a destructive way. You're destroying humanity. That's what it is. You're talking about the world here. You're talking about the whole world. How far is a company willing to go to destroy our country? Oil spill happen every day.
Chief, if I could respond, we feel very much that we are enabling exactly the kind of life that we all want, and certainly the idea of destruction doesn't have any place at all in our discussion. As I mentioned, the energy that we provide, the energy that we move, is so critically important to society as an enabler. It's improved the lifestyle of people and their longevity for ages, and will continue to do so. There's a direct correlation between the use of energy and the well-being of the people. We have to do it safely, and we can. There is no better operator in the world than Enbridge. We operate more crude oil pipelines than anyone. We feel it's very, very important for this nation to do this project. And you mentioned the money. I've said this before with regard to the opponents of Gateway. We could, if the oil doesn't move to the West Coast, it'll move somewhere else. Because we're the biggest transporter of crude oil, that business would come to us. So whether we make the money going west, going east, going south, it doesn't matter. It's not a money issue to us. It is, we think, very important for Canada to broaden out its market and not be totally reliant on the U.S. And we want to find a way that we can do this that can bring to you, to your children, to your grandchildren, the kind of benefits that energy does. And that's our commitment, is to try to do that.
Can I say one thing?
Yes, please.
It is money. No matter how you look at it, it's money. Money for everybody. That's why your shareholders, you put your money in there to make sure you make money. That's what's happening. But I just asking that. You look back in your own communities, look on your children and think of it that way. Don't think about how much money you're going to be getting next day. Tomorrow might not be yours. You never know. You live for today. Be happy. Respect one another. Money is not everything. Your children's everything.
We agree with you. Thank you.
Geraldine Thomas Fleur from Sykes First Nation. At your 2009 AGM, you stated that you don't want to proceed on a project that First Nations are opposed to. This is how it should be. Canada has signed the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and is a party to other international agreements that establish the legal requirement to secure First Nations free, prior, informed consent before proceeding with projects like Enbridge Gateway Project. You have already heard that over 130 First Nations have taken the decision to ban your pipeline and other tar sands infrastructure projects from their territories. We do not consent to this project. Will you respect our decision? Will you end your plans to build Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline? Will you end your plans to introduce oil supertankers and the inevitable threat of oil spills to the North Pacific coast for the first time? What lengths are you willing to go to build this pipeline in the face of our opposition?
Thanks, Geraldine. And, you know, we've talked about this issue before with regard to free, prior, and informed consent. And by the way, I would like to first of all thank you for quoting me correctly, because I've been quoted incorrectly on what I said before, in that we don't want to proceed with this project with opposition. Our objective, and I've said this before, and I know that you shake your heads and tell me it won't happen, is that we want to get your concurrence and your support for the project, and that's our objective. We believe, as I indicated, the project is critically important to Canadians. We must diversify the markets for the most important export that we have as a nation, for the well-being of this country, for our children, for our grandchildren. Somehow we have to work this out, and we've not been able to before, but you have our commitment to continue to work with you to try to reach some kind of agreement that will make the project make sense for you and for us. Thank you.
Mr. Daniels. Chief Jacqueline Thomas, proxy holder, Psychus First Nation. For over 6 years, we have repeatedly laid out our issues and concerns about this Northern Gateway project to you, and last year to your board. And we actually, at the end of it, I was so proud of Pete, because he actually invited you to our territories. We got a letter about that meeting we had on the 10th, the day before the AGM, offering to meet over our issues and concerns with technical experts, as if you have never heard of us. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't have any staff in my office that takes 358 days to formally respond to requests. My question, Mr. Daniels, is whether this kind of response time is typical Enbridge business practice, and what conclusion should I draw from your respect to my people and my rights?
Chief Thomas, first of all, 358 days is not a typical response time, and I'll have to have a look at the specific issue. Maybe you and I can chat afterwards. But that is not a typical response time. And you mentioned that you invited me out to visit. I will try to say this with a little humor. You did throw me off my game a little bit at last year's annual meeting, and maybe I've forgotten that commitment. I thank you for reminding me, and I would very much appreciate the opportunity to sit down and talk with you wherever you would like to do that with regard to the project. And I won't take 358 days to respond.
Actually, can I just follow that up? Because it wasn't just to you. It was to the whole board of directors, and it wasn't to meet just anywhere. We want to take you on the land and tell you what we're talking about right on our land is what the invitation was for.
I would appreciate the opportunity to do that, and it won't take me 358 days to get there, and Janet Holder is going to remind me and make sure that I get there well before that. Thank you.
Thank you for the time. My name is Ron Play, and I am from Longinong First Nation. And to put this in a little bit of context, you are an enabler. You are an enabler. You've enabled my community to be the most polluted spot in North America. That was called by the National Geographic. The World Health Organization said that we had the most contaminated airshed in North America. I'm in Sarnia. I'm here because I was asked to come to support the people from the Yankee, because they see my community in the news, and they see it in the publications, and they see it in movies. We're the worst-case scenario. And we're there because you're an enabler. You don't extract from the tar sands, but you ship the product. You don't extract the gas, but you ship the product. So I don't blame you for the extraction. I don't even blame you for our contamination. But now you want to have Line 9 come through my community and reverse the flow. And the reason why I'm here on that issue is I just watched what happened in Kalamazoo. That pipe wasn't in the ground as long as Line 9. And it leaked. And I went to Kalamazoo a couple of weeks ago. There's still a huge disaster on the ground there. So when I look at my community and the disasters that we have, we're world news. We're the first human population on the planet to have what's called documented endocrine disruption. We have more girls being born than boys. Everybody from CNN to Discovery has come and researched us, wrote stories on us. I teach in a university, so I understand a little bit about this story. I understand the consequences, and I understand your business. And I don't mind your business. I'd like you to take a little bit more responsibility for the stuff that you do, but on the Line 9 particularly, I have a terrible fear of the most contaminated spot in North America getting leaked on. So my question is, how are you going to assure me? I'm the environmental policy analyst for the 7 First Nations of Southwestern Ontario. Your line runs right through each of our communities. How am I going to go home tomorrow and assure them that things are going to be okay?
Ron, I can give you assurances, I hope, but I can't give you guarantees. And, of course, that's one thing that I've been asked a lot about, and nobody can guarantee that. Canada can't guarantee me that I'm going to get home safely either. But the assurances are that, first of all, Line 9, of course, originally operated in a west-to-east mode, then operated east-to-west. The intent is to re-reverse it so that eastern Canadians can take advantage of having access to plentiful and relatively low-cost western Canadian and Bakken crude. We operate to the highest standards. I've mentioned before that we have implemented, on top of everything that we're doing, this operational risk management approach to business that makes us a leader in line integrity in terms of line inspection, line digs. As a matter of fact, Steve Worry, I think we have an inline inspection about to run on Line 9. And that will be, that's part of the ongoing program associated with Line 9. So we will be doing everything in our power, of course, to ensure that there is no incident, there's no issue with regard to Line 9 operation. It also will be operating at well below its fully rated pressure because of the relatively small volume that will be moving through the line.
A quick follow-up on that. Harper said in Oakville in a talk that Line 9 was going to be depositing bitumen at Shell on one side of my community, Suncor on the other side of my community, and the balance of it was going to run down into, we assume, New Brunswick, because he said the East Coast, we're assuming Irving. So processing bitumen is tenfold worse than processing sweet crude. So you are enabling, we're already dying. You're enabling this to happen by doing this. And I know it's your business, and I know you have no control over what you do on either end of your line. But an assurance is small comfort. So I invite you, as they've invited you, to do what many people have, from celebrities to premiers, and come to my community and tour what is the most polluted spot in North America. We're worse than Mexico. We're worse than the tar sands. We're worse than Louisiana, Texas, California. New Jersey looks good to me.
Well, as a matter of fact, we had our full board in Sarnia in September of 2011. I must admit I thought it was a beautiful place, Ron, but I will accept your invitation and be back, and maybe you can enlighten me further from what I thought was a beautiful spot.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Hi there, my name is Nikki Skews, and I live in Smithers, which has the potential to be impacted by Northern Gateway, and I'm also with the organization Forest Ethics. So first of all, I'd like to congratulate you, Mr. Daniel, on your retirement later this year, and I hope that Enbridge, too, will consider retiring Northern Gateway as soon as possible. Enbridge has made repeated mistakes along the proposed pipeline tanker route, from cutting down culturally modified trees in Haisla Territory to bringing RCMP officers into First Nations communities into council meetings, to repeatedly refusing to openly debate the project in affected communities. These communities elected new local governments last November, urging their elected representatives to take a stand against Enbridge's high-risk project, many of whom have since passed resolutions such as Smithers, Terrace, and Prince Rupert. We know about First Nations opposition to this project. Those represented here today have repeatedly made that clear. Those who have spoken at community JRP hearings recently have done so passionately and with a strong sense of place and intimate knowledge of the risks associated with the land and the water. And despite its intimate lobbying with the Harper government, which has won Enbridge many favors, including putting the final review decision into the favorable minister's hands and trips to China, Enbridge will never gain social license to operate. In listening to the people, it's obvious that there will be court cases. People have stated publicly that they're going to put their bodies on the line in front of bulldozers. And on a more subtle front, many public servants have told me, who are in the respective communities, that none of them will grant any of the required permits, whether to cut a right-of-way or to pass one of the many salmon spawning streams. We have, as an organization, collected over 10,000 postcards urging you to drop this project, which we'll be sending more to you soon. And according to a recent Leger poll, which is contrary to the poll that you stated earlier, an Alberta Oil Magazine poll conducted by Leger shows that only 37% of Canadians think Northern Gateway should be built. My question is around political risks, which are still high. The BC NDP has announced clear opposition to Enbridge's high-risk project and recently submitted their letter and their reasons why to the Joint Review Panel. It looks as though they could form the government before a JRP or ministerial decision is made. So how do you think this will impact the company, and will it decide to proceed against the will of the province, who will at that time be representing the people of British Columbia?
Well, it's very hard for me to comment on the specific question, Nikki, with regard to NDP government and their opposition to the project. Because it's hypothetical, it is very difficult. And I've learned a lot of things over the years, but one thing I've learned is that I'm a horrible predictor of political outcomes. And I don't think it would be appropriate for me to comment on that. It is a challenge in building energy infrastructure, and I mentioned this in my introductory remarks, that unfortunately, I don't think we've ever done a project anywhere where we've had 100% acceptance. And I find that so frustrating, because my point about enabling is that we all take advantage of it, don't we? We're taking advantage of it right now. We're using it. And yet no energy infrastructure project's ever accepted by everyone. And it's a challenge that we face. We are doing our best. We will work with the NDP government to try to help them see the benefits. I think that the labor component in BC is a big part of NDP support, and I think they, in a lot of ways, will look forward to the jobs and opportunities from this project as well.
If you don't give it to PetroChina to build your pipeline?
We won't be giving it to PetroChina to build.
Okay. So can you just clarify, does Enbridge see that there is potential political risk in terms of the BC provincial elections and the timing of that?
Yes, we do. We recognize that, for example, right now we don't have clear support from the British Columbia government, and the NDP have indicated that they would be opposed to Gateway. So we do recognize that risk, yes. Thank you.
Mr. Daniels, my name is John Hansen. I'm a shareholder. My point I want to raise to you is also directed at the directors and the executives of your company. We have heard from the First Nations today about the obstruction and objections to the pipeline. I have heard from Enbridge about their transactional thinking in trying to force through the pipeline. I would like to know whether you are going to be able to introduce some transformational thinking to this problem and work through a little more research and application in that area in order to seek a solution to what is clearly a very difficult problem that affects the whole of the North American continent.
John, thank you. Excellent points. And first of all, we're not going to force anything through. I think we've got some people here to tell you that we will not be forcing anything through. I like your idea about some kind of transformational thinking, and I think that that has to be team transformational thinking. We need to come up with some way of addressing what I think is very broadly in the Canadian national interest, but also very much in the interest of First Nations and those communities along the way. Not only First Nations, but all communities along the way. And believe me, we are trying our darndest to come up with some transformational thinking that will get the broad acceptance that we need for the project. Thank you.
I would like to thank all of you people who stayed in the room. We do things by something called Yakudung. Yakudung means respect for all things, including being fit for respect. And I thank those who sat to hear what we had to say and to learn for yourselves the risks and the problems that are happening on the ground. My name is April Churchill. I'm the Vice President of the Haida Nation. We just recently had the Queen Charlotte Islands changed to the Haida Gwaii, back to the Haida Gwaii name. Many of you know that we work diligently and we have an oil tanker moratorium within our territorial seas. And before I ask my question, and I just want to make it absolutely, absolutely clear to everybody in this room, we don't base the well-being of life on money. Our lives, we're actually on the ground every day collecting our food, engaging in our relationships with the animals, with the earth, with the water. The salmon that are born in the Fraser come out into the ocean and they feed all of us. They feed the world. If this is a world problem, the water does not just stay in one place. All of our children, as other people have said, all of your children, go home and take a look at your grandchildren. What will they suffer if there is not water? Take a look at other parts of the world where there isn't water. The waterways feed the ocean. The lands feed the ocean. The trees grow because the ocean is feeding through the bears and through the birds. So to make it absolutely clear, and I wish you would look right into my eyes and know, money will not change our minds. Compensation, there is no compensation that is acceptable that would kill off cultures and kill off people and kill off water for the world and to poison our food system. So understand clearly, that is absolutely out of the question. So my question, thank you for listening to me. My question is, the number of indigenous nations who have banned the Enbridge pipeline and the tankers, and this was done as a matter of indigenous law. We have indigenous law within our territory. It has increased significantly since your last AGM. You now have more than 130 who have bound together to say no. Enbridge will not go through. So that forms an unbroken line from the U.S. border to the Arctic Ocean. This project, and you have to be absolutely honest with your shareholders and investors, this project cannot go forward except by violating Aboriginal title and rights. And your shareholders need to know that. Further, our people have joined together across this nation. That has never happened. Aboriginal people are standing together. We've been kept in positions of divide and conquer, and that no longer exists. We're together. So all of our nations and our legal counsel are taking a look at the legal cases that will be coming at you and which your shareholders will end up having to pay for. And many of you are known in Canada and around the world, investors, as ethical and moral people. That will not be the situation when you're facing the cases, when you're facing the things that we will have to do, because under we were placed on the earth where we are with a creator's gift of wisely using the resources. But along with the gift came the responsibility of caring for our territories. And there is nothing we can do except stand up to that duty. So that it was interesting to see you guys looking over that motion. I would like to know, and I think that all of you should have a look at, you're generally saying, yes, we've done wide assessment. We know what the costs are. But I think that your shareholders should be standing up here, and or if you could at this meeting describe, I read in your little book that you had done a lot of assessment and you understood what the risks and the benefits were. So my question is, on the record for your shareholders, can you please let them know what those risks are, what you're asking them to do? So I thank you.
Thank you. So let me try to sum those risks up, and I am going to try to stick to 2 minutes, and we go through a very thorough risk assessment on any project that we conduct. The risks obviously involve risks around construction time, capital costs, potential overruns on costs, potential delays in the regulatory process, potential delays due to landowner or rights holders' opposition to projects. We do our best that we can in assessing those, disclosing those through our financial documents and regular disclosures. We realize that in the case of Gateway, it is unique. It faces more vocal opposition than any project that we've ever undertaken before. So we have gone to great lengths to try to ensure that opposition, like what you are expressing today, is voiced as openly as possible in front of shareholders. We met with the Inca Dene, the full board did a year ago. We invite similar communication to us, which we then disclose as best we can to our shareholders. I think the fact that you're here today and able to express that is an opportunity for shareholders present, not only here, but on the webcast and the follow-on to this, to be aware of the risks that you have brought to our attention. So I thank you.
I have just one short question.
Sure.
Or recommendation. In your paper, you say that you have visited all of these nations. You have talked to everybody. I do have a recommendation. I would like to hear what you have learned. Our culture in society is very complex. We have
yes.
very complex legal system. I would like to hear you. I mean, all I'm hearing is that we want money. But I would like to hear from you what you think our culture is about and why we have to put ourselves on the line and give up even our life if we have to for this land. What have you learned about our legal system, our society, and our relationships? That would be an interesting thing for you to take a look at, particularly since you're going to visit with the Dene people.
Yes, and you make a very good point. And by the way, I'm going to avoid your answer, and I'm going to tell you why. The first visit that I made to Haida Gwaii, I was told, whatever you do, don't go in and try to think that you can begin to understand in a few days, I think I was there for 4 or 5 days, even one little bit of Aboriginal culture in Canada. So I fully respect the fact that it is a culture that is deep in tradition, and I can't even begin to try. I would insult you if I tried to feedback to you from a podium in a two-minute soundbite your culture, so I'm not going to do that. But I will sit down with you at any point and explain to you and admit how little I know and how much I do want to know.
Thank you. And my point made,
you
don't know what the risk is with us and why we would die for this. Thank
you
very much.
Thank
you for all of you who sat through and are sitting through to hear what we have to say.
And over to the other side, if we could.
Hi, Mr. Daniel.
Yes.
I'm David Peters, and I've been delighted to have been a shareholder for the past several years of Enbridge. I was wondering if you could confirm or if you agree to my understanding of a particular situation. If Enbridge has a pipeline and there's a spill in the pipeline and somebody has property near the pipeline and they suffer some economic damages, then we have a court system that would probably reward the whole owner of that property for the economic damages. And that therefore, when Enbridge built a pipeline, they would consider this risk and what the expected cost of it, and therefore the possibility of spills enters into the net present value decision. Am I right in my understanding of this?
Basically, I would say that you are right in that, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
And sorry, just take me to the next step. We do assess that risk around the potential for any incident, and incidents are generally minor in nature. The reference was made earlier to Kalamazoo River, which was by far the worst incident in the history of the company. That was in 2010. I believe the costs associated with the cleanup on that are $675 million. So that kind of risk is certainly assessed. And by the way, I strongly disagree with the comment earlier that Kalamazoo is still a disaster. It was a mess when the incident occurred, and it is by no means a disaster. Yes.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and to Owen Notley, what's in? Actually, I'll just cut to the chase really quick. Will you accept a parting gift from Notley, Mr. Daniels, today?
Yes, I
brought it with me.
Yes, I will.
By accepting this gift, you acknowledge the Save the Fraser Declaration and over 130 nations across British Columbia have signed, and many, many more nations will be signing on to this. So thank you very much for acknowledging and accepting this gift on behalf of the Yinka Dene.
Thank you very much. And if I could just comment very quickly, I'm a very avid canoeist, and one of the commitments that I have made to a very good friend who ran a canoeing operation on the Kalamazoo River and cried in my face when we had oil spill in the Kalamazoo River, and is now a very good friend. He and I have a commitment to canoe the river very soon. And now I know what my 4-year-old grandson can use to go alongside of me, and I will make sure that he's very aware of the meaning behind the words that you've provided me. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Daniels. I'm Chief Nelmox of the Wet'suwet'en. As I stated earlier, I'm one of the 13 prime ministers of our nation. Earlier, there was a motion put forward, and it was defeated. And in that motion, it just wanted more explanation to the shareholders on the risks involved with First Nations. I was rather disappointed to hear that they wouldn't take that step to find out, because as investors, they're here to look after their investment. I can state on behalf of the Wet'suwet'en and the Gitxsum that the last time we went to court was 20 years it took to get the ruling that we won. We're very patient people. Are your investors that patient? So my question is simply that. Will you tell the investors the risks that are involved, how long their money would be tied up? Because this is only a proposed project, and we refuse this proposal. We're not marrying you. We're burying you. Now, when we discussed this project before, and you stated in your PowerPoint there was 21 nations signed on, and then you verbally said 22. So a little discrepancy there. And now, would you make it public as to who is signed on with you? Because we've made it very public who is signed on with us. You know, public opinion. And should be, if you want to commute properly with Canada, with your investors, this should be open to everybody on who is signed on, so we know who is going to work with you, so that we can have a conversation. This is what it is. Your shareholders are speaking with their money. We need to speak with these people and find out the reasoning behind it. So that those are the questions.
Yes. First, let me comment with regard to the 21 and 22. It was 21 until I found out this morning in our board meeting that it was 22, and I didn't have time to change the overhead, but it was in my notes as 22. And it would not be appropriate for Enbridge to divulge who the 22 are that have signed on. We think it is up to them to self-disclose, and they have signed on in confidence with us. We are perfectly prepared when they're prepared to go public to be with them, but it's their it's not our responsibility. It would be insincere of us if we turned around and said who they were without their permission.
As a follow-up, are they on the proposed route? You can give us a general.
Janet, you're nodding yes.
They are within 80 kilometers either side of the pipeline field. They have traditional land within 160 kilometers past.
That gives us an indication, at least they're Canadian.
Yes, they are. Nikki.
Hi, sorry, just on that quick question. Nikki again, proxy holder. I'm just wondering if you would be able to disclose how much Enbridge has spent to date on lobbying and promotional materials for Northern Gateway and how much the company has budgeted for potential future legal court cases and also brand protection.
I don't have those numbers with me, but we would be happy to provide them unless Al, do you have, but we certainly will provide that, Nikki.
Okay. And is there do you have an indication? I mean, as Chief Namok said, there could be potentially 20 years worth of court cases should it come to that. Is Enbridge budgeting for future legal challenges? And
we haven't done a 20-year budget yet. We work to a 5 to 10-year plan, but I understand what you're saying, and we'll do our best to provide an estimate.
Thanks.
Yes,
I just
wanted
to let you know that the Young Kootenai Alliance came across Canada in a freedom train, and we build alliances all across Canada, stopping in Jasper, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Saskatoon, and finally here. And the First Nations support is overwhelming. We have a petition that's online that is for a tanker ban and a pipeline ban to the coast, and we have over 12,000 signatures in that petition, and you can find it on freedomdrain2012.com.
Thank you, Geraldine.
I just want to clear up a couple of things. In Anjanong's life, we had Indian agents and we had representatives of the Crown come to us and ask us to cede certain titles over. And when we said no, they went to different people until they found certain people that would say yes, and they held those people up, and they became the first chiefs of Anjanong recognized by the Crown. They didn't represent us. They never represented us. When you state that there's been 21 or 22 First Nations that have signed on with you and not say who they are, they don't exist. If they had the strength and the courage to stand up and say, we believe in this company and we believe in what they're doing, they'd be standing here. But they're not. So I can't look at that number of 21 and 22 and say, they don't exist. It's just a number. It's a number on a chart. But you're again doing the same thing that the government did, that the Crown did, that the Indian agent did. You're going to each First Nation time and again saying, please support this project. They say no, and you come back again and again. So no doesn't mean no. No means maybe. We'll keep coming back at you. I find it really ironic that last week was the end of the International Week of Anti-Bullying. We all have children and grandchildren, and bullying is a real perspective of their lives. They fear it. They either take part in it or they hide from it. We're being bullied right now. We're being bullied by companies who have billions of dollars at their disposal. And I speak firsthand because I'm involved in the lawsuit against Suncor, against the Ontario government, and against the Charter Challenge. And I have to put up my house, my car, my bank account, my well-being, my family's future to fight for the well-being of everybody in this room. They have more money than I could ever dream of having in a bank account, but I'm at risk. My personal life is at risk to take this stamp. So as the previous speaker had mentioned, you have a budget for this. You account for this in your strategy and your budgeting to build a pipeline. I can't fight that budget. So should these First Nations challenge these approvals, they're going to go bankrupt. You're going to continue on your way. Would you make a commitment that you would help offset their legal costs in a challenge? That's what I'm asking the Crown to do right now. Would Enbridge be willing to make that?
Is that your direct
question? That's the question.
We're not in the habit of paying people to sue us, Ron. And, you know, we have undertaken and provided funding to First Nations to enter into dialogue on ways in which we can enable this project, what we can do to help ensure that it meets the needs, provides the jobs, the opportunities for First Nations, for kids, grandkids, et cetera. But one thing that we don't do is fund people to sue us.
But again, they wouldn't be suing you. They would be suing the federal government for giving the approval for you to do business.
Well, and you know, now we're getting into an area that I must admit is a little bit beyond our control, because I know part of the issue that we're referring to here is a First Nations to federal government issue, and I'm not a very good politician. I'm even worse when I get involved in the sandwich in between. And so, you know, I can't comment on the issues with the federal government.
Well, thank you for hearing.
Thank you. Yes.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Daniel. My name is Josh Patterson with 1T, and I am a shareholder. I noticed, sir, that you said earlier that Enbridge won't be forcing anything through in terms of the Northern Gateway project. Can we take that as an indication that if there are First Nations who refuse their consent, that Enbridge will decide not to proceed with the project? And based on the answer that you've just given, I anticipate that you might say that, well, that's kind of a matter for the Crown, and if they give you approval, then perhaps, in your view, you're not forcing anything through. But, of course, Enbridge does have agency. It isn't the Crown that is putting the application before the NEB. So I would ask if we can take that as an indication, your statement earlier, that you're genuinely not going to force anything through, and that if First Nations who are along the route refuse consent, that you will withdraw at some point the application.
Again, Josh, it's a hypothetical question, and it's impossible for me to respond to. As I mentioned, I don't think we or any other builder of infrastructure has ever been able to do anything with 100% consent. Is then the implication that Canada should never have built infrastructure? That very train that got you here, it was an infrastructure project that was strongly opposed by a lot of people, strongly opposed, but enabled society in Canada. And so, can I stand here and say that if we have one person opposed that we will not proceed? I can't, because that's not in the interest. That's not the way a democracy works. But we want to reach agreement with First Nations to do our very best to have unanimous agreement and support on the project. And that's our commitment, is to work with you and work with First Nations to try to ensure that. Chief Thomas.
I have to ask the questions that are coming to me, because I'm quite concerned in terms of the words you're using are starting to sound a lot like the words that government are using. And the reason I need to ask is I need to ask for my children, because my spouse is worried about the work that I'm doing. And will I be there for them? And this is company, a threat to my life. I need to know that. And I'm going to put it on the table.
Chief Thomas, Jackie, I know you know me and you know this company well enough that we're not in a position where I can answer that. It certainly is not related to Enbridge.
Can I go? Didn't thought about a minute. Like, when I came over, I know I came over on things that had been built by European people. They've done it with trinkets, the same trinkets you showed up here, given to the third world country. Go to Canadian Tire store and buy that for $30-$40, make a little bit of energy. And I can't believe it's still happening today. It makes me sad to see my chief, the lady. Women, our people, Kadena people, they have high respect for the women, have high respect for all women. Without them, we wouldn't be standing here discussing or debating on anything. Without the water, we wouldn't be here. You're going to take your last breath when you're going to leave this earth. I watch the elders die, and that's what they ask for, is water. first thing that you drink when you're a baby, and it's the last thing. I'm at this point in time, I'm just pleading to the shareholders, look at your own life, look at your own children. We're going to be in courts with the province, with Canada, way past the time you're going to leave. We should be doing that. If federal government, BC government, don't sit down and properly negotiate our lands, then we'll be satisfied. They do not respect even the words that they say. Or not sign a treaty with, because they wanted fish. There was a treaty signed, 1911. The government just disregarded that whole thing and wouldn't talk about it anymore when they were killing off the salmon in BC. And we fought hard for it. BC people are strong. You're going to stand up in court 20 years. Said he's patient. Far past I'm gone, however I go, there's still other people behind me to protect the land. And I asked you a question earlier, how far are you going to go in destroying us, destroying our way of life? Are you going to bring us through courts? Are you going to get the government to bring us to courts? What's happening here? I need to know. I need to go home and say, well, we might sit and talk with you, or we have to gear up for more, respecting all other people of this country. Energy is good. Don't bring it to destroy the human race. That's all I keep saying. We are all humans here, no matter what. The water we fight for, like my chief said this morning, water has no color. And that's the truth. How far are you going to go? Because we're not going away. 200 years with the government, another 200 years not going to hurt us. We've been broke, and no amount of money is going to make us satisfy that you're going to destroy us. We live on government handouts. That's what we live on. We live off the land, and that's why we stand up here today. We live off the land. We make our medicine on the land. And if you destroy that, then you're going to destroy the whole everybody. And I know in my heart that I'm standing up because I know municipality around where we're at is saying that they can't fight anymore, they can't tell the governments anymore because they have to stand up to the law of Canada. And the law of Canada has just been undermining our rights entirely. I want every shareholders and investors to know that we're going to stand up. It's not a threat, it's a way of life for us. I don't want my kids to die. My wife was pretty sad when I was leaving, but she was happy that I was fighting for my kids. She told me at Enbridge, she just mentioned, Enbridge is a big company. You can hire anybody to take you out. You're just one little Indian. And I believe that. I believe the government can do that too. I tell you one thing, you start killing us, never fought before, never fought in a battle, it'll happen. It happens all over the world. We're patient people in BC and Canada. We try to make this thing work. Instead of us going together in history, they put us on a reserve and let us stay there and reap the benefits out of our land. We know that. We allow it to happen because we think one day something is going to be good for us. I'm speaking from my heart, for my people, Karenay. We're going to stand up. We don't have money to stand up, but we're going to stand there. Law of Canada. She said, if we have to depend on the Queen, we'll do that. There's still laws in effect why we're here. Why the river's still flowing, sun still shining, grass still growing. That's what the Queen said. Going to protect us. I hope every one of you today go home and think about what I said about your own children. Children of the world. Children of Canada. I know it's good to have money to do what you want to do to Canada, but tell you the truth, Canada has been broke since 1923. They never got out of the deficit ever since then. They're still in it. And we're killing the land to try to fix it. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Chief. I'll take one more question.
Okay. I just wanted to know how you gauged in regards to the greenhouse gases and all that, seeing how Canada has stepped away from the Kyoto Accord. And every step that Canada or Harper has taken, it's been very obvious to pave the way for this Northern Gateway project in regards to weakening the environmental assessment process. Every law that we were able to stand on in a non-native world, we've used to our advantage. And now, slowly, Harper is stripping that away. And with this GRP process, how can you say it's an impartial process when there you are on TV with Harper in China? How could you consider going forward with a project like this when over 100 First Nations in British Columbia rejected, the municipalities rejected it, the NDP government rejects this? I don't know what other language we need to display this rejection to you. And the other quick note is that in 2011, you stated that the potential shippers were not aware that 50% of this project is in First Nations territories. So are the shippers aware?
Yes, the shippers are very aware. They're part of the funding sponsor group and are very engaged. First of all, on the greenhouse gas emission issue, Enbridge has reduced its greenhouse gas emissions to 21% below 1990 levels. And as I indicated, we have a commitment for every kilowatt of energy we use in projects to generate a kilowatt of renewable energy. So we're very committed to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I was invited to go on a trade mission to China that was organized by the Harper government. I was in a room with the Prime Minister once during that whole time. There were about 30 people around a table. I was there to try to encourage broadening out of Canada's trade with China, because I believe very strongly as a Canadian that I don't like the fact that we're, I guess you could say, held hostage with our energy by selling our most valuable export at below world prices. And that was the purpose of my visit. It was not project specific.
Here in Canada, we're seeing what is televised, and yet it doesn't matter how you dress it up. You're there with Harper, and is that not a conflict of interest?
No, I don't think so. There were many, many companies in the room. So thank you.
Redefining Radio. Radio.